break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I'd like to tell you a little bit about Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Madness grows in this sick society. Posers laud shallow youth for their empty fads. Phonies seek out vain celebrities for instruction. Slaves glorify globalist parasites for their stolen wealth and power. Politicians are puppets, not leaders. Sheep wear masks and accept deadly vaccines. In these dark times, the wise must lead us. So we call the Wisdom Circle.
I have a very inexpensive phone and service system, so sometimes it drops. So if I drop away, I'll call back in or have your producer call me back in, if perchance. You know, when you pay $4 for a phone and $14 for service, that's what you get.
Well, we appreciate, Tom, the, you know, the necessities of life. The economics of the world today are unbelievably bad. Please do tell us how, you know, your story about the fabricated homes. I read it with great interest. Fascinating.
Well, as you can see, a family contacted me back in 2008. They were aware of my success in reversing the charges against the previous family, where they were accused of abuse and neglect. And I discovered that the family had lost one baby, and the second baby was nearly lost to carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, this was not in a manufactured home, but literally in a conventional home that had a furnace installed improperly, or actually properly according to acceptable code, but unacceptable to reason. Anyway, so this family had contacted me. The father was in tears as he was on the phone with me. He said he's been threatened by Child Protective Services to the removal of his child because his child had been ill. And they had no idea as to why, of course, but they'd had people in their congregation, you know, give prayers for and ask, petitioning the Lord for answers or blessings for this child. And of course, the child had already began to improve. You know, they're assuming it was through the prayers, but of course, nature had its part to play too. And the fact that the weather conditions were improving and the family were not relying so much on the combustion of their furnace and the fumes coming from their furnace being drafted back into their living and breathing space. But when I finally got opportunity to see the child, I realized the child had had some kind of environmental poisoning. I wasn't sure what, but I had experience in my lifetime working with a lot of carbon monoxide poisoning events. And since I didn't have control over that child medically, I petitioned the doctor and the pediatricians at the Children's Hospital to do a carboxyhemoglobin as well as a panel on all kinds of environmental toxins. They acted as if they were going to do that, but in the end I found out none of that was done. They were simply pressing forward with the charges against this family with the intent to remove the child and, of course, put it into the system. And as most people know, if your child is taken away from you, they can disappear. Or they can be adopted out for a very nice profit for the system. But anyway, in as it worked out, I just following the spirit, and that's all I can tell you, I made my way down to their home, and when I examined their home, by sheer accident, I noticed this large pipe sticking out of the roof only 3 feet away from the furnace exhaust pipe. And I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, that is weird. What is that? And, of course, I looked around the neighborhood. And there was another mobile home just like theirs down at the corner. I walked over there not knowing what I would find or confront. But what was bizarre is when I knocked on the door, a familiar face opened the door. And this face was the lady that I used to take my poisoning reports to at the Department of Health in the state of Utah. And she was standing there in the doorway with a bloody handkerchief against her face. And she looked out and recognized me. She said, Tom, what are you doing here? And I, of course, returned back. I said, Catherine, what are you doing down here? You see, normally I would have seen her at the Department of Health in Utah, up in Salt Lake. And here I was 180 miles away. And she was living now as a retired government employee, of course, 180 miles away, but she'd moved into a mobile home. And for some reason, she said she'd developed headaches, even had bleeding and nosebleeds. Couldn't figure out why. And of course, I said at that point, I said, Catherine, I think I know why. So I took her outside to the back of her mobile home, had her look up on the roof, and I said, tell me what you see up there. She said, well, I recognize the exhaust of my furnace and the exhaust of my water heater. But then she said, what's that other pipe? Only 3 feet away from the furnace and the water heater being close by also. I said to her, I said, I think, Kathleen, that is your bloody nose. And so she took me inside, and I opened up her furnace closet. Lo and behold, was this duct, flexible duct, coming down from the roof, you know, going towards the direction of that other pipe that we saw on the roof. And that's what's called a blend air intake, only 3 feet away from the furnace exhaust and about 4 feet away from the water heater. Sucking air back in to be blended in and mixed with the air that's being heated or cooled in that system and distributed to the rooms of that mobile home through the ducting system. And when we realized that, I blocked off that intake. From that point on, of course, her nosebleeds and her headaches disappeared. But then at that point, I realized I didn't have just one family that had a problem, but 17 million. In fact, what I realized in that point was why my mother and father had ended up in the hospital back and forth through a winter down in Zuni, New Mexico, where my mother and father had gone down in a what do you call it, a service project to help the Zuni Indians. And they were living in a mobile home down on the Zuni reservation. And one day, this native brother called up and said, "Brother Rogers, your mother and father are in the hospital." And I said, "Well, what's wrong?" He said, "Well, they tell us they both had a heart attack." I said, "Wait a minute, they both had a heart attack in the same day?" And he said, "Well, it appears that way." And, you know, so my parents were taken to the hospital. Of course, they got better because they were not in the environment of their mobile home. They were returned to the mobile home, got sick a few days later, got back to the hospital, again being treated with high flow oxygen for heart issues. Of course, high flow oxygen is the proper treatment for carbon monoxide poisoning too. But that was never looked at. They never tested their blood. So my mother and father bounced back and forth between that trailer on the Zuni reservation and the hospital in Holbrook, Arizona, half a dozen or more times, and through that winter. And we paid out over $100,000 to the medical facility for them treating them with carbon, oxygen. And that stay, presuming it was heart disease. And of course, then that was in 1985 that occurred. When that was occurring, I was up in Salt Lake City and had to trust the people of medicine down there. But now I realized that they had failed to test their blood for carbon monoxide poisoning. So they were treating him for heart disease and sending him back to the trailer again. At that point, I realized I had the entire Native American nations, in the West especially, at risk because a lot of them are living in mobile homes. Now, unfortunately, they don't always have propane or natural gas to burn. But if they're, you know, using a wood stove and happen to use it, the same time that they're trying to move air with electricity through their furnace blower, they'll be bringing in that fumes from their, even from their wood stove. Anyway, in this whole process, I realized I had a nation of people being subjected to poisoning. Sorry about it, I got a lawnmower in the back. Let me close that window. And I'm sorry if I get rambling on.
No, you're doing a great job laying it out. I mean, the question becomes, was it deliberate to wipe out the Native American population using these mobile homes as the mechanism, or was it simply a combination of incompetent design and a failure of the medical establishment to properly diagnose? It's troubling both ways, but no doubt if it were intentional, all the more serious and reprehensible.
By all indications, after my labors in D.C., you know that I, in 2009, 10, and 11, each of those winters, I spent 2 months total, 2 months each time, so a total of 6 months, explaining this problem to every senator, every representative, and or their chief of staff if they were not available. So every office in D.C. was made aware of this problem that I'd identified. I spoke to Obama 3 times face-to-face, Biden 3 times face-to-face, Clinton 3 times face-to-face, you name them. And like I say, every senator, every single senator got to see this information. Yet here we are now, 2021, and the system has never been corrected.
Tom, that's just devastating. That's unbelievable. And of course, when you said Clinton, you meant Hillary Clinton rather than Bill.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton.
Let me turn this over to David Scorpio, Tom. I mean, I think we're all aghast at what you uncovered and the failure of duly elected representatives of the American people to take appropriate action even after you brought it to their attention face to face. Scorpio.
Yes, Dr. Tom, you know, very nice to meet you, and I appreciate you coming on the show with us. And, you know, I'm struck by, you know, hearing your voice is the sincerity that's coming forth from what you're saying. And I just want to comment on that. And Dr. Tom, what do you make of all these important
by
people?
By the way,
Hillary Clinton, Obama, Biden, and no one did anything. And it just seems like we have a ruling elite class that really don't care about the welfare of the American public. It seems like they're completely disconnected, and they're involved in an agenda that is actually, you know, working to actually destroy the health of people, and rather than trying to provide for, you know, healthy situation for people to live in. What are your thoughts on that and the lack of action that you've seen?
Well, I scratched my head because I thought that when I went to D.C. and I did that, nobody sponsoring me, just doing it all on my own. Well, let me put it this way. A few Native Americans did help out. I'm talking about Native Americans that are not on the reservations, because the people on the reservations pretty much are broke. But I thought that when I went to D.C. that they would be grateful for the information, but quite the contrary. I had people yelling at me and telling me to turn my computer off, as I showed literally, like you can see on the webpage, the graphics or the videos of the fumes literally going back into the unit. And what really was a shocker to me was to later find out that mechanism of poisoning had been put in place and made law June 15th of 1976. 1976. That means that every manufactured mobile home produced, what is that now, 45 years ago? Every unit produced has that same arrangement if the unit is heated with natural gas or propane. Now, indeed, even the people that are being heated with electricity, they have a problem also, because the code, according to HUD was given the regulatory power over the manufacturing industry, and they're allowed to put even sewer vents within inches of this intake, even if it's not a natural gas or propane heated, heat pump, so you can literally be sucking in the fumes from your sewer. You know, that's hydrogen sulfide, sulfur dioxide, ammonia, you know, and even in small amounts are deleterious. So you got to scratch your head and say, why would somebody do that? And, you know, people say, well, like you were suggesting, it might have been accidental incompetence. Quite frankly, I won't accept that, because you know who underwrote that change, that arrangement? The National Fire Prevention Association, NFPA. Of all agencies that should be aware of the risk of carbon monoxide poisoning, it should be the people that are responsible to the fire departments. By the way, when you call the fire department after your carbon monoxide alarm has gone off, you know what they will advise you to do? They will tell you, open your doors and windows and go over the neighbors and wait. By the time the fire department gets there with your doors and windows open, what happens to the poisoning poisonous air that's in your mobile home or your or even your home.
Dissipates.
Uh-huh. So generally what they will do is say, well, you got a battery problem in your alarm. In fact, if you go to the edge of my website, there's a link that says Tune, Fox, EPA error. And it's another story of a family that lost two baby girls, a toddler and an infant, because the fire department had been called after their carbon monoxide alarm had sounded several times. And the fire department every time told them, open your doors and the windows, and we'll check when we get there. Go to your neighbor, we'll check when we get there. And every time the fire department got there, that house had cleared. They were advised that apparently it was nothing more than a battery or an alarm malfunction. And ultimately, two little girls died because the fire department, under the direction of NFPA in Washington, D.C., advises people to open their doors and windows, go to the neighbors and wait. By the time the fire department gets there, they'll consider it a false alarm and return the family to that unit and be unwittingly to be poisoned even more. So what I told the NF...
Termination, Tom. This appears to be an extermination program genocide on the Native American Indians. That would be my take.
It's not only the Native Americans. The next population that generally inhabit the manufactured or mobile homes because they are inexpensive housing is the African American families, particularly in the Southeast. And then, of course, behind that are the veterans, the people that are struggling economically. And, of course, the economically disadvantaged whites. So no matter where you call it, the manufactured mobile home industry seems to be the housing instrument of those who are economically or socially challenged. Not just the Native Americans, but, of course, you notice that Russell Means, Lakota brother from South Dakota, was grateful for my discovery, and he actually came out to my home to give me honor just months before he passed away. And it is really sad.
American, a great American, not only a great American Indian, a great American.
Exactly. I think of all people who understand and appreciated the Constitution of the United States, that was Russell Means.
Giuseppe, we want you to participate here, of course, with Dr. Rogers. Please give us some of your thoughts.
Well, what's astounding to me is looking, and I urge everyone to go to gassingamerica.com, standard spelling, and at the very top, it points out that HUD, beginning in 1976, designed and then had built some 7 to 12 million mobile homes, and HUD chose intentionally, obviously, to violate OSHA, IRC, and other many myriad building organization codes and all ventilation safety codes by mandating placement of their so-called fresh intake, aka blend air intake, on the roof, so it's easily unnoticed, only 3 feet away from furnace, water, heater, sewer, attic, and other toxic fumes expelling exhaust fans. So this is 1976. Gerald Ford is president. You still have basically the control of the country in the hands of the Eastern blue blood bankers, who really were quite disgusted with the lower economic classes. So this appears to be, in all interpretations, intentional. And how could you be the only person who's activist and going after this? I mean, to me, this should have been all over the news. This should have been a huge, because back then the news was still fairly ethical and it was still the Fourth Estate. How did this all get covered up for so long?
it is beyond me. Medicine had to be complicit. See, when I was working in the hospital system in the 60s and 70s, the end of the 50s, 60s, and the 70s, if you came in the wintertime, you had a headache, a little nausea, flu-like symptoms, but no fever, we would automatically check your blood for carbon monoxide poisoning. But I found out, see, in the mid-70s, I and a lot of my fellows left medicine because we were disenchanted with the change from mercy to mercenary.
Great line.
But at that point, I found out even from some of my students that I taught, who happened to be in charge of hyperbaric therapy in a particular hospital here that's very famous. He said, Tom, we, in the mid-70s, we were, given this what's called best practices protocol, which basically eliminated the aggressive detection for carbon monoxide poisoning. And I said, why do you think that happened? He said, well, because we can make more money treating somebody for heart disease than we can for carbon monoxide poisoning. I mean, in other words, like my mother and father, instead of being tested for carbon monoxide poisoning and cautioned about their poisoning, and in which my father, who was a heating and air conditioning specialist, would have gone back, carefully examined their mobile home or the environment, and probably would have discovered the problem right away. And they would have had only one visit to the hospital, but as it was, since he was never flagged of a possible poisoning from their furnace, they went back to the home, got re-poisoned, sent back to the hospital again, and again, and again, and again, and as a consequence, the medical community made $100,000 that winter from my mother and father, and the people supporting them on that, on that effort to help the Zuni Nation. So medicine has been a beneficiary of this act. But not only beneficiary, but agent of cover-up. Is how many thousands, if not millions of people have been poisoned with carbon monoxide poisoning? Oh, yeah. Let's go to the Hurricane Katrina event. See, this good man, Jesse Finneran, lives down there in New Orleans area. He saw my work on the web, and he had been made a placement officer of FEMA, putting these families who'd lost their homes to Katrina into these FEMA trailers. And he was getting reports within a few days or a few weeks after of them losing their babies or their elderly in those FEMA trailers. And he was looking for a reasoning. Now, they did notice they could smell the smell of formaldehyde, but they were not aware of the problem with the carbon monoxide. So when he saw my work on the web, he called me up and he said, Dr. Rogers, do you mind coming to New Orleans to help us with this poisoning problem in our trailers? And I said, well, I would be honored to do that, but please do not offend me again. He said, how did I offend you? I said, you called me doctor. I said, what have the doctors done for you that have been down there in the Louisiana, Mississippi area with the poisoning of the deaths of your people in those FEMA trailers? He said, they've written it off as PTSD. Can you imagine? But he didn't want to buy, Chris, he didn't buy that.
Really,
sorry.
This really does appear to be a deliberate plan to murder a lot of poor people who aren't able to take care of themselves by what is supposed to be government largesse or benefits in relation to these trailers, but are actually mechanisms to bring about their death, very much like what we're going through with the vaccines. where these vaccinations, these mRNA vaccines, are, in the words of Sherry Tenpenny, perfectly designed killing machines. And where Luc Montagnier, a Nobel Prize winner, has been quoted, some claim misquoted, as saying everyone who gets a vaccine is going to die. It sounds as though it's not quite that certain with regard to these trailers, but everyone is going to be in the trailers is going to get very sick, and with a certain probability is going to die, including especially children.
Yeah, the primary victim is a fetus in the womb. Because, you know, if you roll a package of cigarettes on its side, I don't know about today, but at least in my day when I was observant of these things, the packet would say, warning to pregnant women, that smoking of cigarettes can be deleterious to your developing fetus. And the primary poisons, multiple, number one, carbon monoxide. Number two, formaldehyde. Now everybody keeps thinking, well, it's nicotine. No, nicotine is trivial. But the real poisoning agent in a cigarette smoke is carbon monoxide, followed by the formaldehyde. Now, how does formaldehyde come into the picture? Well, what is formaldehyde? It's H2CO, or H2OC. So what is formaldehyde? It's simply wet carbon monoxide. And of course, if you're living down in New Orleans, the humidity is high. So whenever you're producing carbon monoxide in the combustion of your stove or furnace or oven, you're also producing formaldehyde. Now see, the people in New Orleans had found out that there was formaldehyde in these units because that's what they tested for. But what was bizarre is they could not figure out why the formaldehyde, which should have dissipated from the glues, you know, the construction materials used in those trailers, after a few months it should dissipate and be gone. But they were getting high levels of formaldehyde even a year, 2 years after the event. So I explained to them, that's because you're creating brand new formaldehyde when you're running your cook stove in that Cajun type cooking, which is turn the stove on in the morning and don't turn it off until you go to bed. And you're trapping all those fumes in that little box called the FEMA trailer. Included in that gas is not only the carbon monoxide, but the formaldehyde that you're producing in that high humidity environment. So now it made sense to them, and that's actually in record linked from my webpage, where you can hear me testifying to that fact to the Congressional Investigative Committee meeting held there in New Orleans. Hopefully there's a link still hot. I hope it's still hot. At the top of the webpage, Gassing America, it'll say License to Kill. I think the link works good, but I'm not sure that the domain name works directly. But in there,
yeah,
you'll go
the
down.
The domain name has expired. It's expired, and there offers renewal instructions.
Well, they know if they wreck you economically, they wreck you functionally.
No doubt.
But I don't know if. Can you click on that link on that top bar? Does it take you to that page anyway or no?
Yeah, it takes you to licensetokill.us, and then it says this domain name has expired, and you could click on renewal instructions, and then you could renew it, evidently.
I'm hoping it isn't so expensive that I can. But anyway, on that page, there's a link to the testimony that I gave in that congressional committee, explaining the fact that the formaldehyde levels are also part of the production of from the running of your cook stove or your oven. And see, that's true of every home. When you're using a gas or propane or a carbon-based fuel heating unit or cooking unit, you're producing carbon monoxide and formaldehyde dependent upon how high the humidity is. But nowhere in the medical community is that considered? In fact, even when Hurricane Sandy occurred, the governor of New Jersey, the governor of New York, the governor of Massachusetts contacted me and asked for advice relative to the problem of Hurricane Sandy. And I said, yes, if people are using a FEMA unit, they are also getting exposed to formaldehyde as well as carbon monoxide.
Tom, I have a question for you. The one of our chatters, Hiberian Blanco Wog, makes the observation ready-made cigarettes have more preservatives in them than Vladimir Lenin's husk that's on display in Russia. And so do you think, because many lower economic class people smoke, do you think the formaldehyde in cigarettes is also essentially intentional to poison?
Oh, yes. By the way, the formaldehyde is a natural product of combustion, particularly when you're combusting in a smoldering process like a cigarette. So when you're breathing the smoke from your cigarette, you're breathing in, of course, carbon dioxide, which basically generally is noxious but not deadly. However, it is depriving you of oxygen. But on top of that, you're getting the carbon monoxide and the formaldehyde. So you put that combination together, and you're a loser, both mentally and physically. And over time, what are you going to do? You're going to die.
Right.
Or at least you're going to be impaired, become non-functional.
And Dr. Tom, I think we're hitting on a bigger issue here, which is, you know, beyond.
By the way, just call me Tom.
Okay.
I don't want to be associated with my fellows that are willing to let you die with a cigarette, a mobile home, or a vaccine.
Good.
Well, you know what? I have tremendous respect for that, and I'll definitely go there. So, Tom, you know, it's really interesting. We're hitting on a bigger issue here, I believe, which is the intentional poisoning of the population. And it goes far beyond just cigarettes and formaldehyde. That's certainly 100% true. Of course, they also put sulfur in cigarettes too. That's why when you light a cigarette, it won't go out on its own. It'll keep burning. And there's actually a variety of other chemicals they put in cigarettes that are all toxic and deadly. And if you look at the intentional introduction of toxins into our food, even our drinking water with chlorine and other additives, it's clear that there's an intentional program here to depopulate the planet, make people sick slowly, so there's, you know, plausible deniability that it's not happening. And of course, COVID and the vaccine is just the end game of this type of thinking and behavior. So I want to get your thoughts on what you think about that.
Now, which piece?
Well, wherever you want to take it, just do you believe that there is a large program that is all-encompassing that's in our food, water, to intentionally make people sick and kill them over a long period of time so that there's plausible deniability? And then now with the vaccines, we're seeing this whole program ramped up to another level, which is intentionally injecting all kinds of toxins and additives that they're going to cause problems with people's health over time with the intentional goal of killing people.
This may sound weird coming from a scientist, but I kind of think that the man who wrote the book of Revelation, Isaiah, the minor prophets in the Old Testament, the apostles, the disciples, Christ, somehow understood science, and they understood the perversion of science. And of course, what's the warning of the book of Revelation? That Babylon the Great, right? And what is Babylon doing? Sending out the vials with these angels or beings to the four corners of the earth, or to the earth. We know there's not corners because it's round. But the poison is delivered in a vial. Is that weird or what? Why the vial?
Interesting.
Well, what is a vaccine, first of all? Vodka. See, in the old days, we made the error of using Latin as the common language of both law and medicine. We figured people don't understand Latin, so we can talk to each other. They'll both know what we're talking about, but the client or the patient will not. So vaccine, vodka. What does that mean in Latin? Cal. Scene is kind, power, life force, or blood. Wow. So what is vaccine? The blood of a beast. The mark of the beast. Oh, my word. And you're hearing that from the mouth of a scientist. I must be crazy. Sorry about that. Let me clear my voice. I must be crazy because I'm believing the literature of these crazy men that wrote in the Bible. No, they were not crazy. All along, the blood of the beast has been the vector of disease. They knew it, and my fellows know it. However, we carefully educate doctors, so not all doctors make a firm connection. How do you get a disease in the first place? That's the question you need to answer. What did Christ do with the sick? Did he put on a PPE, a mask, a respirator? Did he put on a space suit and then lay his hands upon their head? Did he do that before he went to bless the lepers, whose disease is actually on the skin, right? And what did he tell his apostles to do? To go out and bless the sick. And there are some scriptures that I've been driven because I grew up in a religious family, but also a scientific family. And I said, well, wait a minute. If the science is proving to me one thing, what has God got to say about that? And I will just tell you quite frankly, God and true science match. They perfectly match. And I've had to come face to face and deal with that, but medicine has not. They will tell you that this disease is transmitted through the air. It survives on a surface. It's on your grandmother's skin. You don't want to hug your grandmother. You know, you don't want to love her, give her attention in her last days or hours. You want to put her inside of a bubble and look at and wave at her through the window of the door. How does that fit with God's program? Or how does that fit with nature's program? See, I don't care whether you believe in God or nature or in nothing. It's all the same. It's all the same. So the God of nature or the God of heaven, they agree with each other, and these diseases do not transmit through the air. Otherwise, I would have killed a lot of people in the hospital, because I used to go from one individual to another, picking up their wrist, checking for their heartbeat, their pulse, put my hand on their sternum, checking for the breathing rhythm, and then put my hand on their forehead to check them for their temperature. Simply wipe their sweat off if they had any, go to the next patient, touch them the same way. And by the way, when you're using your touch, you know, a fabric or plastic doesn't add to your sensitivity, so you usually do that barehanded. And you just wipe your hands off, maybe wash them now and then, but you never worry about transmitting a disease. And I used to work on AIDS patients, and I'd go sit on the same toilet seat that they'd used just minutes before and never worry about getting AIDS. So I will tell you a fact. These pathogens I don't care whether they are particles, so-called viruses, or bacteria, or mycoplasma. They do not survive out in the environment. They have to be shielded with an envelope of fat. They have to be nourished with flesh and blood to survive and be transmitted.
Well, that's a fascinating observation and real science, which thank you for sharing it. So that leads me to this question then. Clearly, the gain of function COVID-19 bioweapon with the added weird symptoms like the instantaneous loss of sense and smell was intended as a distraction to drive the average normie to take the vaccination, which is the real bioweapon, and it produces these spike proteins. Do you agree or disagree that the real bioweapon is this latest genetic modifying injection that causes the recipient to produce a spike protein that can cause the recipient to clot and supposedly is transmitted? What are your thoughts on that statement?
Well, the reality is most of the science is blovia. You know what I mean by the word blovia?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bullshit.
Exactly.
And a scientist, and I hate to say this, people are going to be offended at me saying this, but even Judy Mikovits or Dr. Tenpenny or any of the other people that come out and they talk about, they give you this long discourse of scientific jargon. So you're in awe of their intelligence. But they never tell you the final important fact. The diseases do not transmit through air. They're not obtained through casual contact. But the rule of thumb, the rule of eternity, is flesh into flesh, fat into fat, blood into blood, plasma into plasma, not flesh to flesh, but flesh into flesh. It's like saying, well, my wife got pregnant because I looked at her from across the room. How does that happen?
Well, I think
what we're doing, sorry,
is weaponized medicine and weaponized science. And like you said, real science and real medicine will fall within God's law. It's not going to contradict it. And the level of deception we're living under regarding these concepts is tremendous. And I think it's because we're dealing with a parasitical elite class that are not in league with God. They're in league with the deceiver, you know, Satan or Lucifer, whatever you want to call it. They're not in line with God. In fact, it's a rebellion against God and God's creation.
See, the rule has always will be, and it doesn't matter how much you claim you've messed with the pathogens in the laboratory. The laws of nature are fixed. And you cannot obtain a disease any more than Christ could pass a disease as a super spreader when he went out and put his hands on the ill. And like I did when I was working in the medical system, I put my hands on the skin of an ill and never worry about getting the disease myself. How stupid was I? No, the fact is, my best friend was the microscope. And my other best friend is the intelligence that allowed that microscope to be invented. Now, what intelligence am I talking about? God. And God told Adam and Eve, right from the beginning, I provided this garden for you, and of every tree that beareth fruit that has seed therein, of these thou mayest freely partake. I'm gonna shock you, maybe make you angry, but I'm gonna tell you a fact. No pathogen. I don't care whether you call it a virus, bacteria, mycoplasma, whatever, a parasite. No parasite, no pathogen comes to you from out of the garden. The enemy of these pathogens, these parasites, is number one, oxygen. Number two, sunlight. ultraviolet light included, microwave energy included, and then cosmic particles. That is the enemy of these pathogens that cause disease in you as the elite member of the animal kingdom, right? I'm assuming you're the elite, the supreme creation of God. These pathogens that sicken man, they do not come from the garden. They come only out of the fat, flesh, and fluid, blood, or plasma, of the animal kingdom, including you. But of all the animals in the animal kingdom, which one is the most sanitary, the most antiseptic? Guess what it is. The only animal that takes a shower, washes his hands, cooks his food, or cremates his food. Which animal is that?
Human beings, Homo sapiens.
Homo sapiens. We are the most sanitary creature on the planet. Yet somehow we've become the most contagious animal. Isn't that bizarre?
That's brilliant.
Do you sweat? Do you sweat?
Oh, of course.
The answer is yes. Do your oil glands produce oil? And in that oil are mild acids. Do you know that? Oh, yeah. Do you produce saliva? Do you produce mucus? Well, guess what? God in his wisdom made your mucus, your saliva, the most active component of your immune system. In fact, when you eat your food, your mother told you, your grandmother told you, chew your food thoroughly and mix the saliva into the food. Why? What is the, how to say, intuitive understanding given in that message? That is that your saliva is a digestive compound, and in science we call that denaturing. Digestive enzymes are present there in your saliva, and any bacteria that's found in that food you've eaten is now being worked on by your saliva. It's destroying that bacteria if it gets mixed into it. So that's why I explained to you that the saliva, your mucus, is the active chemical component of your immune system. It's trying to protect you from your stupidity.
That's so
true. By the way, how many of you have had an infant that you've put on the floor, and that infant will crawl around, pick up objects, put it in its mouth? What's it doing? It's contaminating itself, right? But yeah. God in his wisdom made the saliva of that baby antiseptic. By the way, Native Americans know the old wise wisdom that if you get a wound and you have your dog with you, let your dog lick the wound. Why? Why would you want your dog to lick your wound? Because
powerful.
Because of the saliva.
Right.
It's antiseptic. Now, a dog's saliva is far more potent than yours, because what does a dog eat?
Everything.
Dead critters, living critters, whatever. Pathogenic food, right? So God in his wisdom designed that dog's saliva to be antiseptic. Well, guess what? He did the same with you and your baby. By the way, a baby will be on the floor and the family cat will come into the space. What will that baby want to do with that kitty? Love it, right? Hug it, kiss it. Now, what if the family puppy comes into that space? What will that puppy want to do with that baby? Love it, kiss it, lick it. And where will the tongue of that puppy end up?
It's genitalia.
That's where it was before it kisses the baby, right?
Right.
The tongue of that puppy will end up in the mouth of the baby. How many babies have ever died from a baby loving them, from a puppy loving them?
None.
None.
Tom, we're coming to the break. I want to put out an announcement that if anyone would like to call in with questions for you or Giuseppe or me, the number is 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. We're so glad to have you here today, Tom. You've been doing very significant work, and there's an important message here every American needs to understand. Giuseppe.
Without a doubt. And, we could spend the next 3 days going over the lunacy and the arrogance of Rockefeller snake oil allopathic medicine. For example, instead of leaving the newborn connected to the mother via the umbilical cord to share stem cells and to share the immunity, and you can just go down the list, and the absolute satanic evil of injecting these newborns and putting chemicals in their eyes, this international Jew arrogance of seeking to destroy the Goyim cattle. It sickens me literally.
Unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back! You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back to the event, the combination of Studio A, the Wisdom Circle, and Studio B, the Raw Deal. Yeah. And this is hour two with the brilliant Tom Rogers, MD, a man who has championed the cause of the deadly HUD FEMA trailers for many decades now. And so we'd like to welcome some calls. And I think we've got our first caller is from the UK, Mr. Dean Metcalf. Dean, how are you today? And what's your question for the great Dr. Tom Rogers?
I'm doing well. Hi, Tom. I have a question for you involving mutations or variants of COVID-19. So recently in the UK, we have discovered, and in fact, it was so blatantly corrupt that even Sky News has had to call out the government, that their own figures showed that people from India were being allowed to fly in and out of the country while everyone else was banned from flying, despite the fact that they were claiming on their own figures that there were mutations by a large amount and also a large amount of infections, whereas they were banning Pakistan and Bangladesh that had an equal problem. They got up in Parliament and lied and said that India wasn't a problem, there was no issue with it. And then they were just pulled out in every way, in every metric of their data, that it was completely 180 from what they claimed. So they've been putting people into the country that have supposedly all these variants that are more dangerous. After that, they then claimed, oh, don't worry, the vaccine might deal with that. And we aren't going to worry about potentially stalling the lockdown being eased up. So my question to you is, what is the story behind viruses and mutations or variants? Where does this start and finish? What's the landscape for a layman like me that doesn't understand? Is this just like an infinite hoax, or is there truth to the idea of variants and mutations in viruses like COVID-19?
Well, most of it is nonsense. First of all, I have some friends in India. In fact, at one time, the Dalai Lama had asked me to come to India to explain the disease issues that he was, observing in his host country. Now, I don't know if you understood what I was saying before, but diseases do not go human being to human being unless you're having sexual relationship or intimate physical relations with that individual. In other words, people traveling do not carry the disease to somebody else unless you're going to eat each other or have sex with each other. A casual contact is not a way to get a disease. That's the hard message that most people don't even want to know about. You've got to eat or infuse that disease organism. It does not survive.
So when you talk about eating, because I know you said that touch wasn't a thing, but if you, say, touch something and very quickly consumed it as part of something you're eating, would that virus still be present long enough for that to cause it? Would you literally have to say eat part of a person, if you know what I'm trying to say? Is there like a short life to the virus being out in the environment that it doesn't want to be in, as you described, that will eventually finish you off?
Well, the way diseases transmit, they have to be encapsulated. We call it a fomite. You know, a fomite is a glob or a quantity of fat, flesh, and fluid of life, blood or plasma. And it has to be sufficient enough to protect the organism from the sunlight and the oxygen and the cosmic energy. And it has to be, how to say, infused into you, injected or infected. Isn't that curious? The word is infected, not affected, but infected. Infused. Okay. In other words, this is what shocked the Dalai Lama when he got to listen to me in Washington, D.C. in 2000. Coretta Scott King had asked the Dalai Lama to attend a gathering that she'd put together and asked me to talk about diseases in children. And I said the primary medium moving a disease into children is milk. And of course, the cow is respected as a special animal in India. Protected. Of course, it's kind of weird. They will drink the milk of the cow in India, but in order to have milk, you got to have a calf. What will they do with the calf? They would sell the calf to the Muslims, and they will kill the calf. The Indians will not, but they'll sell that calf to the Indians. So it's kind of like having a paid assassin, right? But I explained to them that the primary method of getting the dysentery and the tuberculosis, all the diseases that they suffer in India, is by their habit of drinking the milk of the cow if they have not boiled it. So he wanted me to go to India, and I said, well, if I go to India, I'm going to offend the Rishis. You know, the spiritual leaders, because I'm going to tell them that God really did not give them the milk of the cow as a gift to them, but it's a gift only to the calf.
Yeah,
And see, what is milk? It's a material that is fat and plasma. And of course, the fleshy material, which feeds the organism until you put it inside you and it starts to eat you. So the fact of the matter is, on this COVID, you have to eat COVID if it exists at all. Or as others have said, it's rebranded flu. And if you notice that there's not that many people dying of the COVID.
No, that's why I was asking about variants, because it seems wonderful timing in the UK that their figures would be going down after they've stopped making fake models, and then that they would look for some deadly spike in a country enter stage left India, and suddenly they have these wonderful flights being put on for them coming in and out of the UK. That was really what I was getting at. So you think that the transmission might not be massive, perhaps, but maybe a variant. This is the final part of my question. Maybe the variant itself, could you see a small spike in people coming down with it worse than we've seen before, perhaps, but not a massive spread? Because obviously there'll be people not just holidaying, it'd be like visiting. That's how they're coming back and forward, you know, that live here most of the time, but they'll be visiting family.
Well, since I worked in veterinary pathology as well as human and pediatric, I understand how you can move a disease effectively, quote, gain of function, right? Just making sure to guarantee that the food supply is contaminated, and of course, people are going to drink milk, they're going to eat cheese, they're going to eat dairy products. Oh yeah, let me tell you the truth about Mary Mullen, Typhoid Mary, as she was called in history. Everybody was told that it was the casual contact with Mary that spread the typhoid among the people that she was working for or serving. But in fact, the reality is Typhoid Mary had a habit that she brought to the United States from Ireland. She loved beer, wine, liquor, right? She was an alcoholic of a sort. And what was the traditional behavior? She'd take a glass of beer and drop a raw egg into the beer and blend it into the beer and then drink it like what we call it, grog, nog. Yeah, nog. That's interesting. So what is the egg famous for vectoring in terms of a disease organism? Salmonella, i.e. typhoid fever. So was it the casual contact with Mary Mullen or having a glass of her favorite drink? Yeah. Now, her immune system had become accustomed to dealing with the high count of Salmonella bacterium. But if you're a brand new child or a family member unaccustomed to drinking raw egg, you're more vulnerable to the infection with that Salmonella. Same thing with the so-called smallpox blankets. That's garbage, nonsense. A blanket cannot maintain a smallpox organism. It dries out, desiccates, right, and decomposes with oxygen. So how would you get smallpox to the Native Americans? You start feeding them something that they hadn't eaten before, European cattle, European milk or cheese or butter. That's how the smallpox, i.e. cowpox, ended up in the Native Americans, not through blankets, but simply through the Bureau of Indian Affairs supplied food.
Okay, thanks very much.
So now, what do you think about this disease coming with the travelers from out of India? Unless you're eating the Indian people, it doesn't happen. So how can I guarantee that a community is going to end up with a wave of infection?
Yes.
I will just infect the livestock.
Yeah, or the immediate family with their or boyfriend, girlfriend, etc. Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be sexually. And by the way, in my family, we do have a saying, if you see a man eating a chicken, he's committing adultery with the chicken. He's adulterating his body with the flesh of that chicken. And of course, the chicken is the famous vulture. that has a whole bunch of disease organisms we watch for in their production. That was part of my assignment back in the 1950s, 1960s, was to check the bacterial load in poultry. And if anybody knew what we find in poultry, it would shock them. But thankfully, most of the time you're eating poultry that's been thoroughly cooked. But the problem is, if you're handling it and you perchance put your hand in your mouth with the blood, fat, and flesh of that animal as you're preparing it, you can pick up that infection. Right. Or if you do like Mary Mullen, you put a raw egg into something like, you know, eggnog, or into mayonnaise or salad dressings, that's when the disease enters the human being. It's not because grandma made chicken soup. It's because you ate the chicken soup. Sorry to say that, because a lot of people are not very comfortable to hear this. By the way, in 1991, when I went through a crisis with my own self, I decided to finally respect the science. So I do not consume any animal food. I do not even bring it into my house. I love my dogs, love my cats. And if I'm out in the field and there's a cow against the fence, I will go, you know, affectionately interact with that animal and never worry about any disease coming from contact socially or casually. But if I am willing to, say, infuse the blood, fat, and flesh of that creature, raw especially, then I know I'm putting myself at risk for even the COVID, the so-called flu. I hope I didn't offend everybody. Everybody just turned off.
No, thanks.
Tom, I think all is well. Giuseppe, would you like to add a few thoughts of your own?
Well, we've got another caller from the 707 area code. Caller, why don't you jump in, tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, hey, this is Tom from Tennessee. Hey, I wanted to get back to something you guys were talking about in the first half regarding mobile homes. And it's specifically, if you're able to prove this undeniable design flaw where you're pulling intake air from a vent that's intended, you know, like the exhaust vent for a heating unit, and it's obviously drawing carbon monoxide into these homes and harming all these people. It seems like this is a slam dunk class action lawsuit, and I mean, there's obviously millions of people who've been harmed. So where is the action on something like this when it's so incredibly easy to prove if this is the case?
Well, I spoke to Jerry Spence, you know, the cowboy lawyer in Wyoming. His answer was, Tom, that's a government lawsuit, and you cannot prevail. He said, I don't have enough money or resources to do it, and nobody does. Imagine you're trying to sue the federal government and the industry. And the medical industry that's allowed this to occur. I mean, I did everything that I humanly could do to try to get it corrected. But here I am 10 years now later, and nothing's been done. Mm. And of course, in the process, I was biologically readjusted, so I lost my home, lost everything. In fact, that's why I'm worried about that website. It's gone into a expiration. I got to find a way to recover it. And that's next to impossible when you live on... Even my Social Security has been messed with.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it just strikes me that there's so many frivolous lawsuits out there that really have minimal minimal evidence of malfeasance and misbehavior and so on, and yet people still are awarded pretty significant sums, that when you just see a massive pattern of behavior, and obviously I just don't see how it'd be possible for professional engineers or other people to sign off on a design like this and not have somehow someone or some a company, corporation, or manufacturer be able to be held to account.
Well, do you know that who got the no-bid contracts to build the FEMA trailers? That was a shocker to me to find out later.
I have no idea.
Halliburton, Bechtel, well, let's see, I'm trying to remember. Shoot, the name escapes me. Anyway, the Carlisle Group and the Podesta Group, the big money interests, were involved in obtaining the no-bid contracts. Clayton Holmes, I'm trying to remember who that is. That's the millionaire guy from Oklahoma, the grandfather. What's his name? Anyway, they're all invested in that. Do you think they're going to want to be sued? Or how about, do you want to sue the National Fire Prevention Association that allowed that, approved of it, put their stamp of approval on that arrangement in violation of all other code, NIOSH, OSHRA, ASHRAE, IRC, all of them? Nobody would ever allow you to put a intake or allow a toxic gas exhaust to be within 3 feet of any opening, breathing air, or allowing air back into a living space.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can just see that if the wind is, you know, you have a gentle wind that's blowing in the right direction, obviously you're just going to be pulling this stuff in wholesale. And so that's
exactly
the kind of thing where it just seems like it's such an that's why I just, you know, I come at this as an engineer myself. And so it just strikes me as, knowing like how easy it is to get sued for minor design flaws, it just blows my mind that this isn't a slam dunk if you can demonstrate this in real life. And it sounds like you have all sorts of evidence to back that up. So despite the size of the companies, it's like, you know, anybody can file a lawsuit. And I just, it's shocking to me that just to see that this something that's so egregious just hasn't really actually seen any justice. So anyway, I appreciate you answering my question very much.
Yeah, Berkshire Hathaway is the other company.
Yeah.
Very good.
The issue you raise is exceptionally important. I'm very glad you called with that issue.
Well, our next caller is a friend of show, Paul from California. Paul, how are you?
Very good. Tom, in the famous words of Sean Hannity, you are a great American. I just quickly want to deal with a couple of things that were just raised, just for the fun of it. The caller from Tennessee, which I'm sorry, I forgot his first name.
Tom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was Tom. So, okay. Yeah. Two Toms.
Okay.
so
no, we're Tom Toms.
there's no slam dunk. Generally, there's no slam dunk in the legal world. And I definitely agree with Tom that the class action approach would generally not be the way to go, because there would be too many defendants named and you would just be dealing with too much money and power. However, a small action naming specifically the manufacturer, the person that did the pipe work or the vent work, for example, you know, medical bills and a very small amount of damage, would likely see success. So the caller from Tennessee is correct that anybody can file a lawsuit, and you can push some paper in court, and they will have to deal with it. They will have to answer it. And the likelihood is, if you're not, you know, taking too big a swings, okay, that you may indeed be able to get some settlement. The problem is that these sorts of people that have been damaged that were living in these trailers, they likely don't have the wherewithal or the mindset or the contacts to generate it, unfortunately. You know, what I was going to say when I first had the idea to call is, Tom, what you remind me of is my journey through the health food stores back in the day, back in California, way, way before, you know, Whole Foods and Amazon and what we have now, there was lots of health food stores pretty much in every community you went. And sometimes they were even staffed by, like, hippie chicks and, you know, hippie guys. And it was my introduction to what I call normal, natural thinking. And that's who you remind me. You remind me of, like, a Dale Carnegie or a Will Rogers or somebody. The kind of people that I am proud to, you know, to say, doctor, I don't think, I understand why you don't want to be, you know, called a doctor, but I think you deserve it, such as Dr. Paul Bragg, Dr. Norman Walker, Dr. Bernard Jensen. These are people that I read from, you know, books, booklets, pamphlets. The very first thing I ever picked up in a health food store, I remember, was Paul Bragg, The Miracle of Fasting. And it was really kind of an amazing thing for me. Sometime back in the 80s, and I'm reading this, and I'm going, wait a minute, you can just heal by not eating? And, you know, he just made the simple point that doctors don't heal you, and medicines don't heal you. You heal yourself. Your body heals yourself. And I remember in one of his books, you know, he had chapters. You know, the chapters were this. You know, and it's kind of funny. People used to sometimes laugh or mock when I would show them or share with them, just like, chapter Dr. Sunshine, Dr. Exercise, Dr. Fresh Air, Dr. Clean Food, Dr. Pure Water, you know, and, you know, it's really that simple. And I mostly agree and believe with almost everything you say. Some of the things about the animals and the eggs and the milk and the cooking, I think there's a little bit more nuanced way to look at it. But overall, I kind of feel like you're the kind of guy that should be where Fauci should be. And my tongue-in-cheek question is, why haven't you received a phone call from Biden or Trump or all the other people?
You know, when you said Fauci, my body flooded with terror.
Well, you should be in his place.
Yeah. Well, I would be there very, very short moment, because the industry would say, no, he's not good for us. I'm talking about the medical pharmaceutical complex, right?
Exactly, yeah.
By the way, Patty Bragg and I are old friends.
Oh, okay.
Paul Bragg's daughter. Yeah, no, unfortunately, for the first 50 years of my life, I was brainwashed into my profession, into the science. And I did exactly what everybody else did. I even knew this, you know, that the pathogens came out of the animal flesh. But I did everything that everybody else did. But then I laid on the steel table in 1991, and I was faced with death myself. I was terminal with cancer. But I already knew that the only true treatment for cancer is your own immune system. So I decided, well, I've got to empower my immune system, because I was classed as terminal. I was given 9 months. So I gave up eating all animal flesh, all animal products. And within a couple of years, they were in shock to find me still alive. So I encourage people too, and I know it's a hard message to accept. You need to go back to your genesis, to the biological program that your body's designed as. And by the way, when things are beginning to get tough, like they are now, you want to get out of the slaughterhouse and into the garden, because your efficiency in terms of nutritional uptake moves from about 20% to 90 or more, nearly 100%, when you stick on pure garden food. You see, the digestive program, when you're eating garden, is simple enzymes. No destructive processes to your own body. But as soon as you eat flesh from an animal, your digestive system has to toggle and switch into what we call acid-base bacteria mucus program. And your digestive efficiency drops down to about 20%. Most of your nutrients end up in the toilet. You can't afford to do that when food has become premium. You're trying to preserve the life of your family. The best way to do it is to go back to the original plan of your creation and get back straight into the garden. Only use the slaughterhouse in an emergency. And it has to be really serious, because that's a dangerous emergency too, because that's where the pathogens come from. People say, well, why aren't the animals dying with the disease? Well, they're given an advantage because of that. They run at higher temperatures than you do, so their immune system is much more active. They also don't tell you when they're sick, do they? Have you ever had a cow come up and say, hey, I've got a headache today, and my stomach is feeling a little bit amiss? No, they just keep on, you know, plowing through life. And quite often in the slaughterhouse, you don't get to know whether that animal is sick or not, because only about 1 in 100 is ever examined. So I encourage people right now, if you want to survive this apocalypse, you got to get back to the original plan of God. And I tell my Native American brothers and sisters, go back to the corn. Get out of the BIA pork and beef that were given to you. Go back to the old plan, live on the corn, and only in desperate times turn to the buffalo. But as long as you got the corn, leave the buffalo alone.
Corn, Tom. Right. You don't want the Monsanto corn, which, I mean, it's unbelievable how much these big companies have been messing with evolution, thinking they can do better in order to fatten their profit margin.
You notice nature still wins out. When you create a GMO, it's only good for one or two generations. Then you have to keep on doing it. So nature limits the amount of messing that man can do, but man can mess. And we've been overwhelmed with that GMO nonsense. So when I talk about the corn to my Native American friends and relatives, I say, I'm talking about the corn that you consumed before white man came with the BIA.
Excellent. We've got another caller from the 619 area code. Why don't you introduce yourself and where you're from and ask Tom a question.
Craig from San Diego. Hey, a doctor, maybe good doctor would be a better appellation.
I just love Tom, because that makes us brothers rather than superior, inferior.
Yeah, fantastic. So going back to, which I liked your message about the basic non-infectiousness of casual contact, that's been my belief for a long time. But I have tried to look at all the evidence and sort it all out. And I believe that it's actually more complex than anyone really understands. That's just my personal view. But I don't believe in pathogenic viruses as where the narrative tells us. So one thing arises in this regard is the supposed transmission of if it's the spike protein or some kind of prion or who knows what, but from the vaccine. So I wonder if you have any thoughts about that, if you've been following that the people who have had the vaccine are supposedly infectious. Can you make any sense of that?
No, nature doesn't prove that anywhere. In my experience, you know, I worked directly in medicine for first decades of my life, and then I've been in education in the last three decades. Nowhere is there an example of nature allowing something to just simply be transmitted through casual air to air, you know, just simple touch to touch. There's nothing that I found that validates that claim at all. But it certainly is frightening, and it takes the power of choice away from you, doesn't it? Anything to make you fearful is working in their favor. So you don't have any control, right? If somebody's been vaccinated, but you're ordered by God to give them love and attention, especially if they're ill, what would happen to the Good Samaritan if he'd have been worried about a PPE or a mask or ventilator or casual contact, right? Would he have been able to fulfill the will of God in taking care of that injured man?
Well, I'm with you. I was going to say, I'm with you on the idea that 99% of the narrative is lies, basically. But I don't know if I find the reports that there is some transmission pretty credible, as far as people who have said they've come into contact with people who have been vaccinated and they've had, you know, problems with their period and bleeding and stuff like that. So that seems credible to me. So I just wonder whether in the complexity of all this, there isn't some way of, understanding what might be going on there.
Well, what I look at more likely is the infusible DNA that each of those individuals experience. Is there DNA in milk? Answer me that. Is there DNA in an egg? Is there DNA in a hamburger? Is there DNA in a cheese? In cheese? And if I can infect the food supply, I can cause symptoms to show up in people who never received the vaccine directly. One of my responsibilities in veterinary pathology was to inject vaccines into cattle. So if I want to put an agent into the human population and they're willing to eat that cow or eat its product, I've vaccinated them by proxy. And by the way, these contacts are generally people that sit at the same table, drink from the same gallon of milk, eat from the same carton of eggs. So is it any wonder if I can put a DNA, RNA package into that food that is fusible with your DNA or RNA, I don't have to do it with a needle. I can do it with the four-prong needle. You know, I call it the four-pronged method of getting you a DNA or RNA corruption, and that's through the fork, or through the glass, or through the spoon. Nobody wants to hear that, though, because it interferes with their appetite. We have been so brainwashed and addicted to the flavor of blood that we now hate to hear anybody say, oh, you'll have to give up your meat. But in fact, isn't it kind of curious in the book of Revelation that when the gospel is being finally accepted, that the animals are rejoicing? Now, this sounds weird coming from a scientist. Why would the animals rejoice? Because they're no longer being butchered or being molested, oppressed, or violated. Am I still on the air?
Yes, you are. We've got another caller, the friend of show, Scaredy Cat. Welcome to the show, Scaredy Cat. Do you have a question for Tom?
Yeah. Hi, Tom and Jim and Giuseppe and everybody. So, I'm worried about all the, quote, doctoring. I'm worried about a young woman who is going to have twins and, God willing, it will all be okay. They've already scared her with saying, automatic cesarean, and she's looking into somebody called, I've never heard of this, is a doula. I've heard of midwife, but maybe this doula concept is somebody who she's, I was going to say who it was, but advocate for the quote patient. I mean, I don't think of a birthing woman as a patient, it's a healthy part of living. But do you know of any hospitals that don't do automatic testing on site, stuff like that, that they will do take, when the young lady is being examined, or when during the birthing or after the babies are born, that they won't whisk the babies away out of sight? And I think Giuseppe said do stuff like put eye drops. Do you know, how can we find out hospitals? And I'm being a little incoherent because I'm I'm quite worried. What Tom, the good Tom, calls intimate contact. You only get, you know, don't worry about handshakes. You know, worry about, you know, what happens after you have sex with the person. So I think of these modern tests as pornographic because they insert things so far through every orifice we have, especially for a pregnant young lady. And even if we don't know, if there are no clinics or hospitals that are more natural, can we please, how can we please start maybe today between you and Giuseppe at least, start building a hospital like that? Go ahead.
Well, that's an answer I have no answer for. That's a question I have no answer for. The only thing I know anymore is to go back to the old original home birth. That's so scary.
And I would add that it's up to the individual, caveat emptor, to take responsibility for your own health. As Tom's mentioning, a clean diet, a lot of things. If you have aches and pains, you can treat naturally. And it's crazy to depend on these insane predatory for-profit allopathic corporate drug dealers. It's just not the way to go. Now, I will temper my comment with the fact that as far as acute care trauma medicine, Western emergency rooms are the best bar none, and there's some amazing innovations in surgery as well, but that's both those cases are basic life-threatening situations. Everything else you should learn to deal with yourself. And so we've got our next call is from 708. Please introduce yourself and what's your question?
Hello, Tom. It's Brew here. I find you in good hands today with Dr. Fetzer and Giuseppe and Dave. You know, they're helping get out information that you possess, this great wealth of knowledge and experience throughout your years, and is being brought here on this show today to a broader audience. And I hope more people share this information because they can save the lives. This information you had of gassing America, among other things, can save the lives of somebody they may know or their own lives, especially with the Gassing America stuff that so many people don't know about. And as I've heard you over the years calling in to other networks, and they'll allow you a couple minutes here, 5 minutes there, whether it be, you know, I won't mention their names, but you're able to slip in information, and then they brush you off for the next caller. But they never have you. I never really truly caught you on as a guest until I decided to reach out for myself and introduce you to Giuseppe and the team here. So I'm glad to have you with us. We want to do more shows like this, and a lot more people really need to know this, because this is stuff, you know, even if we can't get it at the source, we can get it at grassroots and organic and make those differences ourselves. I want to mention you were grasping for that grandfather investor of Clayton Homes. Immediately I knew who you were talking about, so I looked it up, and sure enough, I was right. It's Warren Buffett, the great Warren Buffett. Let's praise Warren Buffett. He's so smart. He's such a savvy investor. You know, and you mentioned his name with Halliburton and Podesta Group and so on and so forth. They know what they're doing. They cut pennies. They cut costs. He is Warren Buffett, if anybody really doesn't know, is actually in the smaller circles considered the godfather. I don't know if he's the godfather of the global cabal or if it's just the North American chapter, but he's the godfather. So he's not this. He's been with Bill Gates and all their nefarious stuff and then doing little funds and, you know, how they're helping the world. No, these people are nefarious. They do nefarious things. They're way ahead of it. Insider trading, the whole nine yards. And I will say, allegedly. But we pretty much know. You don't make that much more money, and you're that ahead of the game without having a lot of help and then helping those other bag men to create their little industry. I'm out of breath.
Sure, you had some coffee
go ahead.
This morning, that brew.
Hey man, I'm on a fast and furious roll this past couple
That's
weeks.
That's awesome,
don't get
bro.
In my way. I'm gonna kneecap you.
And salute right. to you I'm for just finding Tom Rogers and bringing him to Revolution Radio. I mean, he brings so many insights, and it's wonderful. Let's go now to the Murr. Bailey is calling in. It's great to hear you, Murr. What's your question for Tom?
Thank you. Yeah, I love Tom. He is just a wealth of knowledge, and people don't realize what he's saying. And I live this kind of life myself, where, see, the thing with a vegan diet is people ignore nuts and seeds and beans. And I'm not talking about the oils pressed from them. You don't need that. I'm talking about the real deal. So you leave out a large portion of what makes you healthy. And people can't seem to understand that, but they also depend on things like Weston Price, you know, and that turns out to be a religion. They claim veganism is a religion, but who are their funders? It's the beef industry and the dairy industry. And so they don't necessarily have to tell you everything that's true. So, you know, I mean, if you look back at old Oprah when she had the E. coli bit, right? Remember when there was a lot of E. coli going around in the hamburgers? And she swore off meat, okay? And that's when she met up with Phil, Dr. Phil. But anyway, it was a beef industry, so she had to shut up. And you can't sue the government. The judicial system, I don't care what kind of... You don't like that?
I like that. That's awesome. Yeah.
I spell it C-Y-S-T and the with capitals, so, you know, so the cyst is a... And I put a dollar sign in there. That's a parasite. So,
no doubt.
Another parasite. But Warren Buffett, Dr. Phil, they're all involved in this child trafficking stuff. Buffett turned over his fortune to the Gates Foundation some years ago and then made another fortune. You know, and late at night I see him on some, this was years ago, on some economy thing and some money-making CNBC or something, and taking all these furniture manufacturers over to China. And then, oh, look, they don't have to wear protective gear over here. You know, they're slamming together this stuff at pennies on the dollar. And so then the interviewer asked Buffett what his furniture was. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. He wouldn't talk about that. Of course, it's handmade here, right? So.
By the way, Murr.
Yeah.
Murr. Murr.
Yeah.
Call me. This is Tom.
Oh, okay, Tom. I've got your number. I'm not smart enough, Tom. I don't like to listen to you, but I'm not smart enough to converse, I don't think.
Yeah, I've appreciated your efforts working with, you know, with the RBN, with your chat room, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I wanted to make sure.
Chat room.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure you had some information from this 80-year-old quack.
See, this is the thing. We're taught to disrespect our elders. Go throw them in the little, you know, care homes and look what's happening to them, okay? They get people separated so they don't have any extended family, even if it's not your own elders. I've taken care of, you know, an in-law elder that supposedly Alzheimer's, but the story goes that she had a 22 or a couple of them in her head from something back earlier in her life. But, you know, it's this great big woman, and I had to watch her all the time and get in the shower with her with my shorts and T-shirt on, and, you know, hey. But she had a lot of interesting things to say, but they didn't pick up on what was wrong with her because the school bell would go off, the dog would come to her, she'd take the dog for a walk, she'd see the same people and tell them the same jokes, and they didn't have a clue. And ended up her husband, they had a wood stove, and he was in the bed, and she cranked on the furnace, and he died, and he was in the house for 2 days. So, you know, you come behind all these people with their tragic ways of living because they get traumatized even before birth. I mean, it's amazing, the society we live in. You would think there's some goodness to it, but there is not. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at the beautiful nature out my window, the full tree leaves and the puffy clouds and the blue sky, and the birds singing, and I just wish I could send that to everybody. You know, I just feel sorry for them living in cities and not being able to go out and learn what grows wild that you can eat. Yeah? There's everything.
And
there's
just everything. And just quickly for everybody, you can always sleep with the window open. I've been doing it for better part of 30 years, even in cooler weather. I can't stand to sleep in a closed room. I got the window open right next to my bed, and that would have helped a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. The fresh air. Well, see, even the seasonal flu, that is a myth. You know, that's when we're shut up in our houses and eat junk food.
That's
you
right.
You have people out on the ski slopes and out surfing. They're not getting sick.
That's correct.
Yeah, I'm just a little hung up on, still hung up on Murr's vision of the opening scenes of Snow White. But anyway, listen, you know, Tom and I had talked on the set a couple weeks ago, and actually what I really wanted to get, and we'll get this out because I'll have him back on the show, is that what's going on the ground in India. Before I ask Tom to dig in and see if he's got any research for us on that, on the ground research intel, I want to mention that gassingamerica.com is Tom's website. You're going to find all this information about the FEMA trailers and the carbon monoxide and so on and so forth, and count in cases where he's encountered where children and families have been in trouble to try to use this as a tool to take the children from the homes, put them in the court systems, and it's all corruption throughout the whole system, from the judges and the attorneys and the social workers and so on, because they're all getting their paycheck, getting paid all the way down the line, and these children go missing, they get harmed, they get trafficked, they get abused and sold and all, and in many cases, if they don't live through it and are damaged for life, they are dead, okay? And this is a grim reaper thoughts of it all, and it's the truth of the matter. But anyone could contact Tom if they want further information. He's more than willing to have a conversation with you, to talk about anything, and his phone number is on the page. Just leave a message. He'll call you back. Just be kind. This man is 80 years old and a wealth of knowledge. Yeah, wealth of knowledge and so on and so forth, and you're hearing it here, first, second, third, and so forth. But Tom, do you have any intel for us on the ground from India since the last time we spoke? Please, go ahead.
I think I committed to you that I was going to check on that, but I have been in contact with a couple of friends in India, and they're telling me that they're getting the same nonsense over there that we get here. There's this strain.
So is there any truth to the matter that they've all been in panic and they're all getting sick and dying because of the COVID-19 virus and all the variants? What we're being shown here in America and elsewhere, and we're all supposed to donate tons of money to them so they can all get through it, and that we should all be scared and take our vaccines. Is there any truth to that whatsoever, Tom? Please.
Not from the people I talk to.
Murr, go ahead. You want to jump in? Murr.
Yeah, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, go to Jim Stone, jimstone.is, and you'll see a video embedded there, and it's an Indian farmer, and he's marching in Britain, some of these rallies, and he said the people are being starved over there. There is no variant. They're doing that
exactly.
To control them and keep them contained.
Yay. Thank you for saying such a thing, Murr. Yay. Yes. Variants. The only variants we got to worry about are variants of Jews.
That's exactly it.
Right. It's not just the Khazars either, and it's not just, it's all of the Jews. There are individuals that don't participate, but that's a rare thing because it's their whole life. They're brought up that way. Roger Sales was saying when he worked in a video store and this Jewish guy owned it, and his Jewish friends come in, a little boy, and they're throwing him up in the air. It's good to be a Jew. We're the best. You know, who does that? Throw your kid up in the air, usually they're wee, you know, and you're not imprinting them with all this nonsense forever. So,
as George Carlin said, they're in a club and you're not in it.
Yeah, but I can get a big club, big ash club here, like they make baseball bats out of, and I will be part of that club if necessary.
we just have to relocate their club to active volcanoes, and then we're good shape.
There you go. There you go. Well, Jim Fetzer, we have not heard from you in a long time.
Well, the conversation has been carrying itself. I thought this was wonderful, and the response from our callers was certainly appreciative for Tom's presence here. So I've been very pleased to have this, his take on these matters, and I esteem him for all of his great work on the manufactured home and exposing what appears, I find it impossible to deny, this appears to be an attempted genocide. And when you factor in Halliburton, the Carlyle Group, Podesta Group, and all that, I mean, it makes the matter that much worse. I'm very disappointed that Jerry Spence, who's, of course, one of America's great attorneys, felt it would be impossible to bring a suit because you'd be going up against the government. But something most certainly needs to be done. And I think our second Tom was making that point, with which I wholeheartedly agree.
By the way, one other thing I want people to be aware of. In
1993. Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back. I know.